I took a job once where my leader had actually promised a position for me, but that hadn't gotten it approved before hiring me. So I kind of walked into a pretty messy situation where the expectation wasn't real. And so that was one of those, like, take a look in the mirror. And do you want to stick around? Do you want to give it a chance? Do you, you know, what do you do in that scenario? And so, but I used to think that, like, I had to get everywhere on my complete own merit. Like, it was super important that I just had to do it all myself. And this idea of getting help was somehow seen as either weak or my not knowing how to do something. And so I really wish that I'd learned long ago that, in fact, like, everyone gets help and everyone needs help, and we should be seeking help and advice and insight and propping each other up. And wow, would that have been an easier, you know, trajectory? You know, it was funny. I was talking to my CEO the other day, and we're like, I was like, this is such a great, you know, great team of women. And the commentary was like, yeah, and a lot of stuff is getting actually done. Progress is being made, you know?
Welcome to the She's So Sweet podcast, where we interview accomplished women who have worked their way to the C-suite. I'm your host, Christy Felteruso, Chief Customer Officer and award-winning Customer Success Executive. I am so thrilled to introduce today's guest, Mari Cross, CCO of Infor. Hi, Mari. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Christy. Thank you so much for having me.
I have had so few CCOs, and I have to tell you that is intentional because I feel like my network is flooded with customer success professionals. So I really tried to make sure that I got very, very special leaders if they were going to fill these shoes. So I am so excited for our conversation today.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Listen, before we get started, I think it's super important to just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. So let's start with just an overview of Infor for folks that are not familiar with what Infor is, as well as your role as CCO and what that entails there.
Sounds good. Thank you. Yeah, no, Infor is probably the largest company lots of folks haven't heard of before. So it is a cloud-based ERP solution, actually. So we compete a lot against like Oracle and SAP, believe it or not. But it really trying to take a very innovative approach. I think most people have never enjoyed an ERP implementation. In fact, I think they usually have, you know, shock and trauma afterwards for a couple of years. And I think Infor is really trying to change that approach and really make it be a true SaaS model experience where you can continue to innovate over time, that you don't customize it a lot, but it really still allows companies to be agile and be really future-proof with the innovation that's coming down the pike. So in terms of what the role entails at Infor, I have everything basically post the go live date, you know, I would say, but I'm really the advocate for the entire customer experience across any part of the customer journey, where our team is. And then, I have the support organization, customer success management, managed services, references. We do a lot of the innovation and digital in our teams as well. So it's a pretty exciting, position for me because it really get to impact, you know, the experience our customers, actually feel.
Mari, tell me a little bit about your team. How large is your organization?
It is about 1,800 people, I believe. So they're
that
global.
That is a big team.
It's a big team. Yeah, it's global. It's really super fun. The company in general is really global because there's a lot of acquisitions that happened to put it all together over time. And so, you know, I get myself out to India and Manila and Singapore and Europe and in the United States. It's been a lot of fun.
I love that. Well, we're going to talk more about, because I'm sure there's some interesting tidbits about managing a team that large
yes.
and global and still feeling like you're connected to people. Because when you get to that size and scale, I'm sure things look and feel
it
very
is.
Different.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, I have to start from the beginning because all good stories have a start. So you've now obviously become the Chief Customer Officer at Infor. We've just talked about the role. It is a massive role. But yep. I have to imagine that little Mari, when you were sitting home as a young adult early, right? What did you want to be when you grew up? Because nobody ever seeks out and says, like, I'm going to be a chief customer officer. I didn't even know 15 years ago that I would be doing this. So what did you want to do?
Well, so I actually grew up in Russia. And so I was, you know, asked to play the piano when I was like age three and was performing. But what I really found is that I loved music and I wanted to be a dancer. Like I could feel the music in my body and I would practice in front of the mirror and like literally it was just such a glorious feeling. So there was a long time that I was like, oh, I'm just going to be a dancer. That clearly didn't end up happening, but that was the dream.
So was it ballet? Like, was it jazz? Like what kind of dance?
There was tap, there was ballet.
Okay.
But I think, you know, I don't think I really got that far that I was really studying seriously. In fact, I think I actually kept up my piano longer, but again, in my mind that, you know, I was going to parlay this into dancing. I did a lot of dancing socially. How's that? If you ask any of my friends.
You know, I love that. I love somebody who can go out and enjoy themselves. So that is great. So talk to me a little bit about your journey. So obviously you didn't jump from dancer to chief customer officer. No. So what did your ascent to your current role look like?
Yeah, well, so, you know, maybe just a little bit of history. So I mentioned I was born in Russia. My parents moved here when I was 7. And so they left their entire, you know, family and world behind. My mom ended up getting a job at IBM and became this great role model for me. She was actually doing artificial intelligence way back when. So it's like, what? It's fun to see Gen AI right now because it's the stuff she was trying to crack back then. And then my dad was a doctor. He moved over here and went through residency again, learned English again, and became a doctor again, did you know, the entire thing. And so I will say, I think I had some very good role models in my life about grit and determination and what to do. So, but the way I was raised, it was that certainly education was really important. And you just did a degree that got you a job. And so I became an engineer. And then and I was a developer and I was good at it. But what I will say is that I quickly figured out that as much as I was good at it, it wasn't necessarily the thing that gave me a lot of passion. And so I ended up going to business school and was very fortunate to be able to do that. And then ever since then, I've been in all sorts of customer facing roles, everything from strategy consulting and business development and sales. And eventually I landed in a role for account management. And this was before customer success was a thing, but the role was at a company that had a recurring revenue model. So I would say like I was doing customer success before customer success had a name. But it was really, really fun. And I think ever since then, I've really, you know, decided I wanted that long-term relationship with customers in some way or another and trying to figure out how to help them get value out of what they bought. And that's been kind of my trajectory probably for the last 20 years then.
I love that. And it is so interesting. If you talk to enough leaders who have been around long enough, they'll tell you they started their customer success role in account management, right? And like kind of totally. That just transition to
client services.
Right. And it's interesting. You have so many people who are trying to like piece apart the differences to just like really distinguish. No, they're not the same, but it's like, there's so much overlap. We need to stop trying to just put everything in its bucket and say like, nope, these two things are really different because they're not.
And usually for me, it's also like the title of the role is like, you know, people have lots of different definitions because you could have an account management role that was all sales. You could have one that's all customer success. So it really is a matter of what the role actually is.
Exactly. And I tell people that too, like we can't even just limit it to title. If you think about even the company, like here's an interesting one, right? You and I hold the same title. I can guarantee you and I are doing very different things in our day to day. My organization is a small, small fraction of what yours is, right? So the scope of our work and our, you know, our contributions probably looks a little different. So always very interesting to hear though, that journey. Always starts with account management.
Always.
All right. Well, listen, I know that there has probably been some real pivotal moments. I mean, outside of moving from Russia and coming with your family, because I have to assume that that was probably the first big pivotal moment for you all. But what were some of the other pivotal moments in your journey or decisions that you feel like really contributed to your success?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think, you know, certainly the pivot between being an engineer or developer and going into business, right? I had to very much think quite hard about that and say, you know, this is kind of all I've known and I'm about to go into a very big unknown field and hope I figure it out. But I just kind of had a feeling that as much as I love the analytical part of engineering, that there was something missing for me. So I think that was a pivotal moment in terms of being able to take a chance and you know, put myself out there, right? So that was pretty huge. I think the other couple were, you know, really, I would almost say like taking moments in my life that were potentially challenges and making them into experiences and paths forward. So I remember at one point, a company I worked for named Cyan during the dot-com bust, it went under. And, everyone was really, really worried about getting another job, as was I, but I took the $11,000, I got a severance, woohoo, and I tried to figure out how to make that last. And, I'd never had the opportunity to go travel globally before, so I went traveling for 5 months in Southeast Asia, and it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. Very eye-opening, and I will say I think I kind of came back a little bit of a more grounded, different person, just by being able to, take that opportunity when it presented itself and do something for myself. And then I think, maybe just a couple of other pivotal moments, there certainly was, one time I was, my job at Adobe, when I was given that job, and it was really to create a customer success organization from scratch, which is a little bit daunting because I had never really done it from scratch before. And as much as I believed in my own skills, it was at a different scale and a different kind of, Adobe's a huge place and has a great reputation. And so, but I think just taking the leap and saying, I believe in myself and I think I can do this. I think that was a pretty pivotal moment, I think, in my career, kind of what got me here.
So let's go back to the switch from engineering, because I see a lot of people that are kind of stuck in, I don't say stuck, right? Who am I to say if they're stuck or not? But maybe they'll even share that they are not feeling super fulfilled in their current role. Mm-hmm. What were the signs or what were the things that you said, it is time for me to make this change, right? Because admittedly, you were good at the work that you were doing. You had your degree in this. So for all intents and purposes, you were successful in executing in the day-to-day, but there was something missing. And so what were some of the things that you really took notice of or, that contributed to that decision? Because I think it's important for folks to understand maybe what to pay attention to or what to think about when deciding whether or not to stay in a career.
Yeah. And I think it's different, right? Because let's be clear, everyone has a day where they're just not happy with their job, right? Like someone, you have a bad meeting, you have a bad interaction, or you just feel like you're, pushing a boulder uphill, right? So it's not to say that you should take any one of those days and say, hey, I need a new career, a new job every time that happens. But I do think that there's an element of fulfillment where, and this was a big learning for me that, again, being Russian, you got an engineering degree because you were good at it. You do have to, in my opinion, combine what you're passionate about with what you're good at. And I think as I was doing the work, there was a little bit of joy that was missing over a period of time. I'm a people person. I mean, you can probably tell that by now, right?
Right.
I like to talk to people. So just even the sheer idea that I was by myself so much of the day just doing programming. And I was like, this is clearly not activating all the things in me. And it took me probably about a year to get to that decision because it took a while to even admit that I had maybe even chosen wrong to begin with, or, not feeling bad about that, but actually just thinking about, it's just time to potentially investigate. I know there's tons of people who maybe do have a 5-year plan or know exactly their path. I've never been one of those people. So I think foundationally, I'm a try before you buy kind of person. So I was like, well, this might not feel right. And I might not get it exactly right in the next one. But I do think it's like that zigzaggy way through, the world is kind of foundationally what I really also just believe in general. So it's like, what's the harm? I can't imagine it's going to be a bad idea to get a business degree.
No, never, never. No. Okay, so now I want to go back to Adobe because now you took on a big challenge here to build something that didn't exist from scratch. And now when we talk to so many folks all the time, imposter syndrome is real. And so I have to imagine that you had a little bit of that going into something that you've never done before, right? And being 100%. Tasked with such a huge project. So what was that experience like? And was imposter syndrome something that you did navigate or go through?
Oh, for sure. Probably still do every day. But no, I think that there were some customer success folks that worked at Adobe before. So I don't want to overstate it. But what didn't exist was a programmatic approach to driving value for our customers. And so it was, and I think we reported up through the SC organization. I mean, it was, there was not a standalone function. And so it was one of those things where, A, I was very fortunate that I chose my my leader as well as the position. And so, because we basically said, you know, he was like, hey, I really believe in you. I think you can do this. And I said, okay, great. I believe in me too. And so having that, making sure you had the right kind of mentorship and support from leadership was really important. And then a lot of what I did was really like, it was the milestone one, prove it, then move on type of approach, because I think you end up getting so much momentum as you go through that. And it doesn't mean you don't have imposter syndrome, but it was also that, you know, this idea of like trying to take away this pressure of doing it all at once and just doing the one step at a time. And then it was fun because at first people were like, really, you're going to do this? Okay, great. You know, no problem. You know, have fun with it. And then as we started kind of getting more momentum and getting more attention, it really did speed up. And it was really, really fun to see the impact of it. And so then it kind of grew like wildfire after that.
Oh, that's an amazing story. I think everyone should be able to take a leap like that and take on something and really do something and try something that they hadn't done before and really just trust in yourself. Because I always say, it's not that you can't do these things, it's just you haven't done it before.
Yes. And that, I mean, it's huge, right? And it's like, you do have to, you, I mean, there's so many positions people have gotten into, like, you know, first time CEOs, like you have to at some point say, I'm going to just try it, because it is something you just need to experience for yourself to know if you can do it or not, or if you want to do it or not, to be honest, even.
Right. Now, listen, okay, you have these pivotal moments that could be shaped as successes. They could be shaped as challenges or opportunities, but I need to figure out what some of the harder challenges were that you navigated, right? Because with an ascent to the role that you're in, I have to imagine that there were some real obstacles that you had overcome. What were some of those? How did you approach those professionally? How did you overcome them? Share some of that.
Yeah. You know, I think there's everything. I've had a few challenges, everything from on the personal level where I still think I speak too fast at times, but when I was younger, I spoke even faster. And I think a lot of that came out of insecurity and just wanting to get everything, you know, just out into the world. And I think there, you know, I definitely got a bunch of feedback over time that was literally like almost cutting away at my ability to drive impact, because people couldn't hear me. They couldn't follow along and they couldn't buy into the vision. And so that was just on a personal level, just something I continue to work on even today. I also get very excited. So I would say it's like, you know, the Russian in me kind of comes out and I talk with my hands and, you know, that all takes over. But there's certainly, again, we had to really work on just, okay, being very intentional about what I was going to say, getting some of the nerves out of my system through practice, quite frankly. And then over time, it became really fun to take people along for the ride and kind of do the pausing along the way. So that was just more of a personal, you know, style perspective. But I think other challenges I've had, you know, I honestly have had some interesting situations in taking jobs. I took a job once where my leader had actually promised a position for me, but that hadn't gotten it approved before hiring me. So I kind of walked into a pretty messy situation where the expectation wasn't real. And so that was one of those, like, take a look in the mirror and do you want to stick around? Do you want to give it a chance? Do you, you know, what do you do in that scenario? And so I think the philosophy that I take oftentimes is just give it a chance first. And if it really doesn't work out, then, you know, then you can make your decisions. Right. And I'm not afraid to make them. So that's good. But yeah, I had to really like take another leap of faith there and be like, okay, well, I do believe in myself, so I'm going to work this out. But if, you know, what I need to get out of this isn't coming, then I will, you know, of course have to potentially depart, and not being afraid to do so. I did end up leaving the company at some point.
Yeah. Taking the chances is an interesting one. That is an interesting situation. I have found myself in some pickles. I have not found myself in that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was an interesting one. It was definitely an interesting one. I will protect the named, but you know, it was interesting.
Of course. Very good. Okay. Well, I also think that as professionals and as women, I would say we don't spend enough time celebrating and acknowledging our successes, because again, you wouldn't be where you are if you hadn't overcome those obstacles, but have had tremendous success professionally as well. What would you look back and say are some of your proudest moments professionally or accomplishments that you've had so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really is, you know, I think back on my Adobe experience, I feel like the biggest thing that I'm so proud of there is that we built a success team that actually did drive great impact for our customers, but it was a fabulous team too. Wow, did I love that team. I mean, it was a bunch of, you know, super powered, you know, women and men that really did just great work. And I had so much fun seeing them thrive and just blossom. So by the time I ended up leaving Adobe, like I literally had no concern that that company and that team was going to do great things, because they were like, that's like probably my biggest, pleasure, right? Was like really building up that team. So that's just one. And I think, you know, in general, I'm really very excited about coaching others. So, there's some great individuals where, they started off as people I just kind of knew, and now they're my dear friends. So I think that's just an aspect of my career in general that I really like is the coaching and success of others.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to give us a little bit of insight into how you think about building a successful team. Cause I feel like it's an easy thing to get wrong.
Yeah.
Right? So when you think about that, because I do think that that's a huge success and something you should be super proud of. What were some of the things that you considered, right, as you're building out this team to go accomplish this huge goal you had? How did you ensure that you were building the right organization? And then how did you create a culture that allowed them to thrive and be so successful?
Yeah, I mean, I think foundationally, you know, have you ever taken the Gardner StrengthsFinders thing?
Yes, I've done StrengthsFinders. Okay. I've done the Enneagram. I've kind of defined myself through every test available.
There you go, right? So mine are, you know, I am strategic, analytical, and then an activator. And by the way, and there's something called woo in there as well. So I think that there's, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
There's that part of me that I really get excited about activating other people. So there's first is like in terms of the who you're hiring, I do believe hiring for potential and for the different perspectives is pretty important, right? So there's like a big part of the conversation that isn't just about your past experience or what you've done, but the potential and potentially how you're going to fit with the team. Because I do think the team dynamic is important. You know, you could be great at your job, but if you're full of ego, that's just not going to have a place in organizations that I think are very successful. So, you know, we've got a lot of that going on. And then some of the other parts, like I spend a lot of time with my team, especially in the beginning. And then there's also this idea of, you know, pace setting is not necessarily always good because you don't want to be the one in front. But in the beginning, when you're forming a team, if there's some helpful constructs about how much you're involved with them to really almost like showcase and be the, you know, kind of the what good looks like or what the expectations are. And so I spend a ton of time with my team, especially in the beginning, to ideate, to help make sure that the visions are aligned and to do a lot of coaching. Especially in the beginning, I think it's really, really important until the teams meld and then they can really take it forward on a lot more on their own. And so I think that idea of spending the time with them and doing it, in person, having ideation sessions, having those like workshops, even a lot of those things, I think build really good foundational pieces to long-term success and developing a personal relationship. Quite frankly, I've had my team members over to my house. We have fun. We really don't hire people that we can't be ourselves with. So a lot of that goes into, I think, building the right culture as well.
All right. Well, you did emphasize the importance of being together, which I do mm-hmm. believe strengthens relationships. But now as we see so many companies moving to this remote first environment, what advice do you have? And I mean, listen, you manage a global team, which means you're not seeing all these people in person all the time. What are some tips or tricks or ways that you think about building relationships and keeping that connectivity across the teams when you are so dispersed?
Totally. Well, and I think, again, you know, when you have a team this big, you also have to really rely on your leaders to be there, right? And to actually further this as well. So, I mean, again, it's like, I can't possibly be the only person that, you know, can relate in this way. It has to be the team. So That's one. You know, I do try to, I would say, like, water the plants a little bit, right? Like, I do try to get myself out there. I don't think I can lead a global team without ever actually visiting the sites and talking to folks personally. But otherwise, I think you can also, I think you have to, you know, I think it's worthwhile to bring teams together every once in a while, even though expensive. If you're remote, that's okay for most of the time, but every once in a while, bringing folks together is important. Cost aside, right? And then finally, I think it's important to build in, you know, time that is like no work talk, but even from a remote perspective, right? So you just, you can have a session every couple of weeks or whatever it is, where you just chat, you have a happy hour, you do something that is really very much so based on personal interaction and getting to know people on a human level. And I think all that stuff builds over time.
I love that. I think it's great advice. I think folks are still struggling with how to build and maintain a culture in a remote first world. So I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on that.
The She's So Sweet podcast is brought to you by Client Success. Client Success is an all-in-one customer success platform to help post-sale implementation and success teams manage customers from new to renew. Through an industry-leading platform approach, Client Success gives businesses an in-depth view into customer health, product usage trends, along with churn and risk data so that your team can not only retain customers, but help them grow as well. Whether it's managing customer onboarding workflows in shared portals, building custom health scores, tracking sentiment with NPS surveys, or doing more with less through AI and automations, Client Success gives customer success professionals a true one-stop platform to manage all aspects of the customer journey. To learn more about the industry's fastest to implement customer success platform, visit www.clientsuccess.com. That's Client Success. Simple, powerful customer success.
We're a podcast celebrating and honoring the successful women in tech. So I want to talk about the saying that I love so much, which is empowered women empower women. So I know that this is something that is important to you as well. We've talked about this when we've chatted, but what are some of the things that you're doing to empower the future leaders, right? As we think about women kind of rising to their roles in leadership.
Yeah. You know, I've always been part of, like, you know, the formal organizations, like, you know, our WIN organizations and things like that. But I also typically, I very much so like, I think I mentioned before, coaching and mentorship. And so I'm usually mentoring a few women at any given moment, both formally and informally. And, you know, I when I was at Adobe, for instance, I choose to take a chance on folks. Like, I had an early in career, recent business school grad as my chief of staff, which is a lot more work when you hire someone from a position, you know, when they've never done the job before. But I actually really enjoy putting someone in that kind of position because they get to then learn and see something that they maybe wouldn't be exposed to otherwise. And so that's a little bit one at a time, but, you know, it's worked out for me well, that just for my style as well. But, you know, just kind of giving folks an opportunity to see what it takes to run a large business when they maybe wouldn't have had that visibility normally. I'm not very hierarchical at all. And so I try to take moments like that to really help foster that. And usually it is women that I'm mentoring. It's not always, but usually.
It never always is. But listen, let's be honest. I think the women that are trying to grow their careers seek other women, because that was the big gap for us, right? I don't know about you, but I think back to my professional journey, and I just didn't see a lot of women in leadership, especially executive leadership roles. And so I think now there is just this real hunger for us to see and celebrate and hear how the women who did do it successfully, like yourself, how they did it.
100%. And I never think that I've got it all 100% right. I mean, I still...
Well, none of us do.
Yeah. I'm like, I want to have a lot of phone-a-friends when I'm like, what am I doing with this company of this size? You know, I need... Who's my friend that I can call, you know, to ask some questions about how to do something, right? Or how to, you know, how to deal with a challenge. So, yeah, I think it doesn't even matter what age you are, how early in career. I think this idea of having peers to talk to and being open enough to ask those questions and get advice is really, really important. It doesn't go away.
Yeah. I think that there's this idea of, like, building your board of directors, right? Who are this, who's this elite group of folks that you've brought into your personal circle that you go to for advice and mentorship and guidance, and sometimes just a shoulder to lean on, to cry to. But it's important that we build that. So I love that you are making a commitment to helping, you know, professionals kind of build their careers and giving opportunities, because you don't see folks who are often willing, especially in your role, because it is a time commitment to say, you've never done it, but clearly this is something you'd be good at. And I want to guide you and teach you and give you that experience.
Yeah. So far, I've not been disappointed. Honestly, it's been really, really fun for me, to the point where I'm actually like, I think friends with those people.
Like, oh, I love that.
I got to go to a couple of weddings even.
Oh, that's so great. Okay. Well, listen, I'm sure you're not just all work and that there is a personal life that you have. And one of the things that we hear professionals ask, especially in tech, right, where there is just such high demand for us to kind of always be on. And I think there's this idea that there can be work-life balance, or that there is this utopian state that we all get to at some point, which I've tried to tell people that there isn't. But how do you think about balancing the demands of your role as Chief Customer Officer at Infor in your personal life? And what are some of the strategies or habits that you've put in place to really facilitate that?
Yeah. It is real hard to have like work-life balance all the time. I always say that, like, you know, I think it's more periods of my life that I've had tons of work and then tons of balance. Like, I've been, you know, I actually took a year off when my son was in kindergarten because it just happened to work out, and that was great. And I got rested and then I went back into it again. But yeah, these roles, I mean, you know, I'm traveling globally. It's definitely not always the most balanced. I will say that, you know, the things that I've learned over time are, like, when you do have a little bit of a break, take it, right? And just knowing that it's going to get busy again, and don't feel guilty about actually, like, if you have a couple of light days, actually take them as light days, and, you know, do whatever errands you need to do. Keep your sanity. Like, you can slow down on the grind in the little moments. And then I think my husband and I have really tried very hard. We both were working really, really hard both at the same time. And when I started Infor, he actually took 6 months off because he was in between startups. So that helped. Now he's starting a company again. So I'll be honest, we're trying to figure it out again. But yeah, you know, it really is, like, I think from a personal habits perspective on a day-to-day basis, I mean, I exercise. And I'll be honest, I will look at my calendar, because I work for an East Coast company and I'm on the West Coast. I will look at my calendar, because clearly I'm not going to work out at, you know, 4 a.m. before my 6 a.m. starts, but I will block 9 to 10 off and sneak one in there, and then get back on at noon, East Coast time, when I come back for lunch or whatever. So, you know what I mean? Like, there's, like, these little things that I end up doing just to make sure that I'm sane and maintain some sort of, like, healthy balance, because otherwise it would not be tenable, I think, long-term if I didn't.
Yeah. I think it's super important to figure that out. I am the crazy people that does, like, the 4 a.m. get up and work out, but
gosh.
I am East Coast, so I don't have to worry about time zones. In fact, I have the opposite, where my company primarily is in mountain. So I have a 2 hour morning buffer.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
allows me to do my workout, get my kid to school, get my morning going, and then hit the ground. So, but to your point, it's important to figure out what does that look like for your schedule and build in that time.
Totally. And just also knowing that if you're always on, like, you do have to kind of make it your own, right? Like, do not feel guilty about it. You just have to make it your own, because it's not sustainable otherwise.
Now, you've given us a bunch of great advice and tips so far in our conversation, and I know that we're not done, but what's a piece of advice you wish you had earlier in your career that you feel may have changed some things for you?
You know, I think maybe two things. One is that, one would be that, you know, I used to think, and maybe this was just my Russian upbringing, but I used to think that, like, I had to get everywhere on my complete own merit. Like, it was super important that I just had to do it all myself. And this idea of getting help was somehow seen as either weak or my not knowing how to do something. And so I really wish that I'd learned long ago that, in fact, like, everyone gets help and everyone needs help, and we should be seeking help and advice and insight and propping each other up. And wow, would that have been an easier, you know, trajectory, I think. So that's kind of, like, one of the biggest learnings, is that it doesn't mean that you're failing if you're asking for help, or advice. And I think the second one is, I think perspective is really everything. So things happen to us all the time. And you know, there are always three sides to, you know, that event. You can think of it as bad, but they're probably going to open up some open doors for you otherwise. And to try to stay in that you know, you have to go through the feelings of all the feels, right? But to try to think about what are the possible unlocks from the, you know, whatever challenge is being thrown your way or how to get around it. And, you know, I always think about this idea of like when someone says no, I'm like, well, I'll just wait for a month and I'll think about how to attack that in a different way, you know, or like, what does that really tell me that I should be doing differently? You know, so like not always wallowing in like the negativity of like the thing, but just kind of trying to get a little perspective to it.
I think those are two great pieces of advice. I will say I am not Russian, but I grew up at an Italian and Puerto Rican household where my parents were super independent, owned their own businesses growing up. So like yourself, learned grit early on, work hard for everything you have. And I wish I would have asked for help. I still think that there are days that I am still conditioned to do it on my own and figure it out. And I forget that I have amazing resources that I can go to and leverage. And to your point, it doesn't make me a bad leader. It doesn't make me weak. It probably makes me more ineffective by not asking for help. So I think like the not asking is the shortcoming, not asking. So
100%. My team is constantly like, how can we help you? Like what's going, you know what I mean? Like take advantage of it. And like, it's just going to make you closer and it's going to be better in the long run. Right.
Yeah, that goes back to the delegation thing I got to work on too. I put those all in the same buckets. It's like, you know, I'm a work in progress here too. Okay, so you've made it so far in your career, but obviously by no means is this the end for you. So as you start to think about your future goals and things that excite you about what you might want to do next professionally, what does that look like for you? What are some of the things that you, I know you don't do a 5-year plan, so yeah, I'm not going to ask you 5 years out, but what are some of like, as you just think about your future, what are things that you're like, you know, I haven't done this yet. I would love to go tackle that type of opportunity or that project, or these are things that might excite me.
This is going to be a pretty funny answer, I think, but I actually really love being a CCO. So I don't want to be a CEO, actually. I'm pretty comfortable with that. I really do love kind of all the things that are still left untapped in the customer experience world. I think we're still scratching the surface, quite frankly, right? Everyone's working on a lot of stuff. I think technology is coming along. There's so much innovation that is going to make things be really different. And I love innovating. So I think, you know, whatever that is, it's going to be, I think, like innovating in this idea, in the space of customer experience. It might be as a CCO, it might be in a different, you know, in a different path, but that's kind of the area where I really like love to focus. Whereas the intersection, I would say, even of customer experience and technology, maybe being more specific. I think at some point, I would love to do more coaching. You know, at some point that's going to be more of a, you know, the macro part of my life versus the working full time, but I still have a few more years before that happens. In the meantime, I'm going to learn lots of stuff.
Right. And you're going to ask for help along the way.
And I'm going to ask for help along the way. I'm going to call lots of people about who've done it before better than
I have. We're going to phone friends. We're going to figure it out. This is like the whole AI thing for customer success. Yeah. I'm like, you know, we should not, like everyone's like trying to figure out like, we have to have this solved already. I'm like, guys, like we don't even have fundamental customer experience things nailed yet. Can we please stop? Like it's all part of this evolution.
Yeah, we are not. I mean, I think there's a lot of discovering and innovation left to do. And so I'm pretty excited to be part of that.
Love that. Now, obviously, we're talking about females in tech here. Mm-hmm. You've seen, obviously, quite an evolution yourself professionally. Mm-hmm. Like you've worked at some of these amazing companies along the way. What would you say were some of the things that you've seen evolve in for women specifically in tech over the years? And like, what should we be proud of? Because I feel like there's always like this, oh, we still have so much to do. It's like, yes, but that's true for everything. So, you know, looking back, what does that evolution look like? And what should we be celebrating and acknowledging?
Yeah. I mean, I will say like my leadership team is, there's a lot of women in my leadership team. And so I do feel like there's a lot more leadership kind of coming up. I do think, you know, They're from where I have been sitting, at least, and certainly in recent years, you know, I really get to do my thing, and I see a lot of women getting to do their thing, and I do think we should be proud of that. In fact, you know, it was funny. I was talking to my CEO the other day, and I was like, this is such a great, you know, great team of women, and the commentary was like, yeah, and a lot of stuff is getting actually done. Progress is being made, you know. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of there's a lot of great women in leadership right now. And I would just say, like, just kind of make sure, you know, I'd say it's like continue on the path, because women are being asked to be on boards more. Women are, certainly having lots of great opportunities. Again, it doesn't mean that there's not work to do, but I think I see a great opening and a great path forward for women as leaders.
I love that. And I see a similar trend, and I'm excited about the future. You know, I think I shared with you and I've shared with folks, but the reason why I even went on as far as creating this podcast was I have a 16-year-old daughter who's about to embark on her, you know, college journey. And I'm like, I never want her to look in a room and see an absence of female leadership. And so I'm excited. I'm inspired. And I honestly, I think about and I watch the women that I see kind of growing up professionally in these roles, and like, they're more assertive, they're more vocal, they're taking chances, they're progressive in their thoughts and how they're thinking about their careers. And I think we just need more of that. We need to continue to support that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's lots of good work being done for sure.
Well, I'm glad that you see it as well. So before we wrap up today, obviously we've covered so much. I took oodles of notes, and I say oodles. I took so many notes as we're going through this because you shared so many great insights, and I'm so grateful for that. But we've got listeners who have followed now this entire episode through. So I want you to leave them with some like golden nugget. Before we wrap up, what's the one thing you want our listeners to take away with them today?
Truthfully, the glass is half full. I really do. Like, I think it's, you know, this idea of looking forward, I think we should be excited for what's to come. Because I think there, that, you know, between the path that, you know, to our point, the path that women have, the opportunity is there. The work is exciting. There is a way to do it. And so I think there, like I said, whatever's gets thrown at you, I think the glass is half full.
I love that. I do think that we all need to be a little bit more optimistic. So I hope that that's good advice for everyone. I hope as you're looking at your cup, you feel like it's full. Mari, thank you so much for your time today. Your journey is truly inspiring. The work that you're doing is so impressive. And I'm just so excited to see what the future holds for you and your team at Infor. So thank you everybody for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe on YouTube, connect on LinkedIn. And thank you again. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. Talk soon.
Thanks, Mari.
Hi, guys. I want to share a bit about an organization that I support called Wednesday Women. They're on a mission to increase the visibility of executive women leaders that you should know, learn from, and be inspired by. On LinkedIn, they share the profile of two amazing women each week, on Wednesdays, of course. And now just imagine if we all followed, amplified, and nominated the women that we want to see more of. Their initiative provides examples of women CEOs, founders, sales executives, technical leaders, and so many more. By supporting Wednesday Women, you'll see more of these professionals in your social feeds, of course, but also on stages, podcasts, and panels. If you're interested in learning more and supporting their initiative, head over to www.wednesdaywomen.org or follow them on LinkedIn.